This episode is sponsored by the Learn Jazz Standards Inner Circle. If your goal is to level up your jazz playing this year and feel confident improvising over jazz standards, the Inner Circle has everything you need and more. With monthly jazz standard studies, a library of powerful courses, and a vibrant community of like-minded musicians, you're guaranteed to improve your playing every single month. Podcast listeners can get 50% off their first month when you go to ljsinnercircle.com. That's ljsinnercircle.com or find the link in the show notes. Now, on to today's episode. Hey, check it out. If you've ever been confused about minor chord progressions, how to build them, what chords are in the minor tonality and how you put those together, why it is not as easy as just simply harmonizing a minor scale, well, then this is the episode for you. You are going to love this episode. All your questions will be answered in just 1 second. But first, let's cue the music.
Welcome to the LJS Podcast, where you get weekly jazz tips, interviews, stories, and advice for becoming a better jazz musician. And now your host, he's a jazz musician, author, and entrepreneur, Brent Bartstra.
All right. Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Brent. I am the jazz musician behind the website LearnJazzStandards.com, which is a blog and a podcast all geared towards helping you become a better jazz musician. And listen, I am so excited because on today's episode 114, I'm having one of my old professors from the City College of New York come on the show, Dan Carrillo, and he's going to explain to us everything we need to know about minor tonality, how to build minor chord progressions. And listen, this is one of these questions I get all the time from my audience, you who's listening to the podcast, those who follow the blog, my email subscribers, constantly asking me about this and getting completely confused because when we talk about creating minor chord progressions and minor tonality, it's not as simple as the major diatonic series, where it's pretty simple. If you can harmonize a major scale with seventh chords or triads, you can easily come up with exactly what chords are in the diatonic series. But the problem with minor tonality is we have three different scales we're dealing with: the natural minor, the harmonic minor, and the melodic minor, and therefore it's just not so cut and dry. And I've tried to explain this before in some of my books, and I've simplified it. But as Dan Carrillo will tell you, sometimes by explaining things simply, you just get a simple answer. And sometimes a simple answer isn't a complete answer. So that's why, I have a feeling for this show, every time I get an email about this question, I'm just going to just straight up send a link to this show, because this show literally answers all of your questions that you could possibly have. Now, I'm really excited to get Dan on the show because, I mean, this guy is so knowledgeable. I learned so much from studying with him in my college days, and today he lays it down for you. So do not take this episode for granted. You have a brilliant man who's about to explain some amazing stuff for you. So tune in. Now, hey, one more thing before we jump in with this interview. Hey, if you have not subscribed to this show yet, if you've been listening for a while and you haven't clicked that subscribe button on iTunes or your favorite podcast listening service, it's time to do it. I don't want you to miss any episodes that we come out with this show. I just can't allow you to do that. All right. So click subscribe, get subscribed to the show. And now without further ado, let's get on Dan Carrillo. All right, welcoming on the show today is guitarist, composer, and my old professor from the City College of New York. So excited to have him on. It's Dan Carrillo. Dan, thanks for being on the show today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. I'm really happy to be on.
I am really excited to have you on because you're someone, and I just want to publicly thank you too, just for all of your years of service, just teaching young adults music and setting them up for success. And I always, whenever I publish a book or anything, I always have all of my professors and everybody in the back of that book thanking them. And you're definitely one of them. So thank you so much for all you've taught me. And I'm just excited because now my audience is going to get to hear you share some of your knowledge. So this is a very exciting time for me. So thanks again. Now, I want everybody to get to know you a little better. So how about you give just the 3 minute, the short version of the Dan Carrillo bio?
Okay, I will do that. You said I'm guitarist, a professor, composer. And so I I'm a professor at the City College of New York. I was started full-time there in 1989. Before that, I was a touring and recording New York guitar player and did a whole bunch of jingles, a bunch of albums, some Broadway, but a lot of road work. So I was the musical director and guitarist for Tanya Maria and for John Lucien, and I was guitarist in Harry Belafonte's band. And those three were my main sources for work for probably about 14 years, from 1979-ish into the early 1990s, when I really just stopped doing that kind of thing and put myself in the classroom, you know, for good. And a lot of jingles and playing clubs in New York. Some of the composing, I had two records out with a group called Crossings in the 1980s with a partner, Mark Irwin, who's a wonderful pianist and composer, and worked also with Diane Reeves and Paul Winter, and recorded with Lonnie Liston Smith, and just did a lot of that kind of work, a lot of jingles and that kind of thing. But then getting into the teaching at City College, which is where I did my undergraduate and graduate education as well, really took over, and trying to understand what I do in a way that I could pass it on to students, you know, that's understandable and helpful, became the focus. And then when Ron Carter retired, I became the director of the jazz program, and that was a big responsibility. It took a lot of my energy, my focus. And so now I'm retiring and putting my energy back into playing and composing and recording and just searching the areas that are interesting to me. I'm learning to play the oud. I'm learning to play the sitar. I'm interested in world music. And so just following those paths.
Yeah, and congratulations on your retirement, much deserved, after all those great years of teaching and directing the program, the Jazz Studies program over at the City College of New York. And like I said earlier, it was a pleasure being your student. And so this is all very exciting. And one of the things that I really got out of one of the classes that I took with you was exploring a lot of harmony stuff. You taught a harmony class there that I was a part of, but especially this exploring minor tonalities. And so one of the big questions, I get this all the time, and this is one of the reasons that I thought of you right away to have on as a guest, is I get this question of minor keys. You know, what chords are in minor keys? What is minor tonality? Because what's a little confusing to people is that major keys seem so cut and dry. If you harmonize a major scale with seventh chords or triads, you can come up with different chord qualities for the different tones of that scale, right? The one chord, the two chord, the three chord, and so on and so forth. But when it comes to minor tonality, that gets so confusing for people. So we're going to completely unlock that today. We're going to dig into your brain and figure out what this is all about so that we can step away from this episode just having a better understanding of this. And I think you really got a real good understanding of this to share with us today. So I want to ask you, first of all, why is this so complicated? Why is minor tonality so hard for people to understand?
It is hard because there's three different forms of the minor scale. That's the basic answer. And so when we build our seventh chords, I won't deal with triads, I'll go straight to seventh chords. When we build our seventh chords from each of those scales, we get different chord qualities. And so, for example, if you build a two chord in natural minor, you will have a half diminished chord quality. But if you build it in melodic minor, you will have a minor seven chord quality. So as you said, the question is, well, what's the two chord in minor?
Right.
You know,
and which one is it?
Which one is it? And so you find that at every scale degree, you have multiple choices. I think one of the first things that, the first thing to do is to not think of it as scales, but to think of it as tonality. And so both of those two chords are possible and useful depending on the situation. However, one of them is used more frequently than the other. And as we go through the different scale degrees, we see that there's one used more frequently. And that is the set of chords that I tend to think of as the common chords. And I'll get into that a little bit more later. So let me backtrack a little bit. With the three different minor scales, if we build the seventh chords from each, we find that we don't have three sets of chords, that we really only have two. For example,
interesting.
The two chord for the natural minor scale is the same as the two chord for the harmonic minor scale.
Okay.
And the three chord for the melodic minor scale is the same as the three chord for the harmonic minor scale. Okay, and so when you look at the three and you take out the duplications, you're left with two for each scale degree.
Gotcha. And
my approach has been to organize those two sets of chords into a set of common and a set of alternate. And so the common chords, it's not something that I just think that these are the ones I like. They're the ones that show up mostly in the tunes that we play. You know, and so when we play a tune that's in a minor key, let's say Beautiful Love, the two chord has a half diminished quality. When we play Alone Together, the two chord has a half diminished quality.
Right.
When we play The Shadow of Your Smile, the two chord has a minor seven quality.
I was about to ask you about that specific song. I'm glad you're bringing it up.
Right. And so, you know, we look at the songs that we play and we see that The Shadow of Your Smile is the exception,
right,
and that Alone Together is the norm. And so we play, for example, Round Midnight, and the two chord has a half diminished quality. And we play Autumn Leaves, and the two chord has a half diminished quality. So the alternate chords appear now and again, but not with great frequency, and in some cases, not at all. Like the three major seven sharp five chord that we get in the minor tonality from the either the melodic minor or the harmonic minor scale. I don't think I've ever seen that in a standard.
Right.
But I play it. And that's the next area of how to use the alternate chords as substitution possibilities for color.
Gotcha. Now, I want to just backtrack one second. For those listening right now that are just like, what minor tonality, harmonizing chords, what are we talking about here? So I just want to quickly kind of brush on the 101s here. So we're talking about harmonizing a scale in general. What we're talking about is you spell out a scale, and then you're stacking the third, the fifth, and the seventh on, if we're doing seventh chords, that is. You're stacking those on top of each scale tone and building that out. And when you do that, you come up with different qualities of chords, right? Because if it's got a flat three in it, okay, we know that this is possibly a minor seventh chord, or it's a half diminished, or it's a fully diminished. So you come to those conclusions by building out these chords and harmonizing these scales that way. So I just wanted to clarify that for everybody listening right now. Now, as far as, so what you just said is that we can boil down, and the reason this is complicated, we've got three scales going on, the natural minor, the harmonic minor, the melodic minor scale, and that's making this complex, but we can boil it down to two different options of chords going on. Now, when you say that, I'm assuming that means we're boring different tones from different scales, but you don't like that, thinking of it that way, right? Is that true? You'd like to think of it more in a bigger essence, the tonality.
Yes, that is true. I think that the history of tonal music bears that out. So that when Bach wrote, I'm going to play, okay? We can say, oh, that's harmonic minor. But what I think he's dealing with is the flat six as its tendency to five, and the sharp seven as its tendency to one.
Right.
See, and so he has this in his voice leading spread out in his line. Or when Mozart wrote, And so you have the natural minor scale, but then you have the harmonic minor scale. And I don't think he's thinking of them as different scale qualities. I think he has the harmonic minor scale because he wants to hear this. He wants 5-1 in resolution. So 5-1 is more important than scale.
Right. See, I love that.
Yeah. 5-1 is the basis of all tonal function. And so when we take, I'll go back, you know, you talked about the three sets of scales. So the natural minor, I'm glad you do that. I'm glad you did what you did, because I will go into kind of more advanced stuff and to bring it back to someone who's like, I don't know what he's talking about.
Right, you did a great job there.
So if I have the natural minor scale, the five chord, you said we stack, is a minor seven quality. So it doesn't have a tendency to resolve to one. So natural minor doesn't have 5-1. But harmonic minor has. And so it's tonality.
It's what makes that five chord dominant, correct?
Yes, that's right. The quality is dominant and the function is dominant.
Right.
You know, so, and I think that's another thing where we kind of get a little bit lost with qualities and not thinking function. And sometimes when we think function and we understand that the function of a two chord isn't minor seven. The function of this two chord is predominant. You know, that's a different way of looking at it. That's why 2-5-1 is the progression, because two is predominant.
Predominant. I like that. Okay. Right.
It predicts the dominant. It sets up the dominant.
Right. Right.
So if, what sets up the dominant? The subdominant. And so two is a subdominant function chord.
Right.
You see? Excellent. And so, yeah, so we're thinking of them in terms of tonality and function and not so much from the scale. And so when we build the three sets of chords, I could do this pretty quickly, and if you need to back it off a little bit, then please feel free to do that. When we build the three sets of chords and we see the duplications and we eliminate the duplications, we're left with two for each scale degree. So the one chord can be minor seven or minor major seven.
Because minor major seven is in the harmonic, if you harmonize the one chord in the harmonic and the melodic minor scales, they are major minor minor major sevens rather.
That's correct, yeah. And so the two chord can be half diminished or minor seven. Again, the half diminished is natural minor and harmonic minor. So you take out the duplication, and the minor seven quality is melodic minor. So you have two.
Gotcha.
So each chord you have major seven or major seven sharp five. The four chord you have minor seven or dominant seven. Five chord you have minor seven or just play it simply, dominant seven. Six chord, you have major seven or half diminished seven from the melodic. The seven chord, you have dominant seven. This is a special case. You have diminished seven. You also have half diminished seven from the melodic minor scale. And that's the only degree where you get three chords. And I don't even deal with the half-diminished quality there because it never shows up.
On the seventh chord, or the seventh tonality. Okay.
Yes, it never shows up as a functioning seventh chord.
So it's always a dominant seventh or a diminished seventh chord.
Yes.
Gotcha.
So now you have your two qualities at each degree, and so you separate them out. And the way I did it, or do it, is by practicality. What do we usually play? So I take a song like Autumn Leaves and play it in G minor, and I have C minor, it's a minor 7-4 chord, F7 is a dominant 7, 7 chord. B flat is a major 7, 3 chord. E flat is a major 7, 6 chord. A half diminished is a half diminished 2 chord. 5, 7, D7 is a dominant 7. And 1 is minor, and I played minor 6 there.
I like that. So you're actually comparing all those chords to the parent minor key center rather than even just thinking about them as like, oh, it's the relative major. That's great.
Putting it as excuse me, one tonality instead of thinking maybe, for example, 2-5-1 in B flat, and then there's a 2-5-1 in G minor, and then the E flat chord sort of floats somewhere between them. And it's disconnecting for me. And I listen to, for example, the way Miles plays on that, on the Cannonball Adderley.
Oh yeah,
something else. And he doesn't outline the chords. I don't know it exactly. It's something like this.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He uses a little slur into that note. Yeah.
You know, and so he's playing just a long 8-bar phrase in G minor and not a 2-5-1 in B flat and then a 2-5-1 in G minor. But then the next solo is this Cannonball. And he definitely breaks them into 2-5-1s.
Right. He's bebopping it up.
That's right. And so it's important for me to not think that there's a right way to look at it. Oh, no, it's in G minor. Oh, no, it's 2-5-1. It's both. And the way we think about it in the moment will have an impact on the way we phrase and cadence and end our phrases.
Right.
And alter our dominance. So Miles doesn't alter the F7 chord, but Cannonball does.
He does, right. Exactly, you know? Which is very typical of a bebop player to do that, you know, to add that extra tension in there. Now, for anybody who's panicking right now, who's having an absolute panic attack listening to this and just, I think I'm never going to get it. We're at the show notes today, learnjazzstandards.com/episode114. If you go there, that's the number is 114. We're going to have this spelt out a little bit for you, those two different options of changes that Dan is talking about. Can we go over those one more time? So sure. I know that you have, so there's two sets, but would you consider one more common than the other? Like, is there a common and is there an alternate?
I do, yeah. I think the common, would you like me to just name the common?
Yeah, that would be great. Could you play them too?
Yeah, sure. I think, yes, I can. For me, I like the one chord that I build from the melodic minor scale.
Okay.
Rather than, I think it's more common that people use the minor 7 chord for one. But I like, and I'll tell you why. I'm off on a tangent, so just a little moment here.
Sure.
It's the only chord that sounds like that. And it makes the one chord special. So when we play a minor 7 1 chord, it has the same quality as the 4 chord, and it's not special. But when we play a minor 7 with a minor 1 chord with a major 7, it's special, so that when you hear a progression, for example, 2-5,
yes,
it's unique.
Yes.
It's a unique sound. So now back to your question about common and alternate. So the common at the one position, I think of as minor major 7. The common at the two position, half diminished.
Which comes from the natural minor scale.
Yes, that's right. Now you can say that it also comes from the harmonic minor scale.
Right, right, Tris.
You can. Right? And so then the question comes, which scale works better when I'm improvising? Can we defer that till a little bit later?
Sure, yes.
Okay. The three chord is major 7. The four chord is minor 7. 5 chord is dominant, 6 major 7, 7 dominant, and 1 back.
Now, did my ears deceive me, but on the 5 chord you played a sharp 9, right?
I did.
Right. Why is that? The thing is, I did that. See, before we got on, I did that this morning too, and I played a sharp 9.
Yeah. So,
and I heard you do it too.
Yeah. So I think about the 5 chord coming from the harmonic minor scale, and that sharp 9 is not there.
Right.
Which again leads me to it gives evidence to the fact that it's not about scales, it's about tonality.
Yes.
See, and so the 5 chord with the sharp 9, there's a movement between the 7th note to the 1 and flat 9, sharp 9, flat 9 to the 5. And so there's voice leading in there. So the connection, I would have to, you know, from a theoretical point of view, I would say that each of the 3 scales has something about it that's not satisfying. And for the harmonic minor scale, the piece of it that's not satisfying is the way the 6th note and the 7th note have such a wide interval between them. They don't connect. 7 wants to resolve to 1. That's its tendency. 6 to 5. That's its tendency. And so there's a disconnect melodically between 6 and 7 of the scale.
Right.
The sharp 9 on the 5 chord bridges that.
Interesting. I like that.
Yeah, it fills that space.
But it goes back to just, it's that resolution. It's that, it comes back to that 5-1, you know, and
yes,
and that tension and release going in there. I think that's, there's going to be so many main takeaways from this, but one of the big ones I'm getting right now is I'm just getting that when we think about doing this with scales versus tonality, we get in a lot of trouble, and it's so freeing when we think about it this other way. So yeah. Really quickly, so the common harmonization here. So one chord, the minor major 7, the 2 chord is the half diminished, the 3 chord is the major 7, the 4 chord is a minor 7, the 5 chord is a dominant 7, the 6 chord is a major 7, and the 7th chord is a dominant 7th. So what about these alternate sets of changes, the ones that you would consider the alternate?
Right. So the 1 chord would be minor 7.
Okay.
As I said earlier, and I'll just reiterate briefly, it's used a lot. I can't really say common alternate on the 1 chord.
Okay.
I have a preference for the melodic minor sound. The 2 chord is minor 7. And we mentioned earlier the shadow of your smile.
Yes.
Starts on the 2 chord. So it's a different key. Right? That's the melody.
the minor, there it was.
So you hear the raised 6th degree in the melody from the melodic minor scale, and that's making the 2 chord a minor 7 chord. And it does what the melodic minor scale wants to do. 6-7-1. The melodic minor scale is a connection in the ascending form from 5 to 1. Whereas the natural minor scale doesn't connect it that way. Doesn't have the pull to 1. And so okay, got the melody. Right?
Nice voicing. I like that voicing. You'll show me that later.
What a little tip. Open strings.
Open strings, guitar players. Everybody yeah. knows about that. The guitar was supposed to be played with open strings. None of this jazz business.
Exactly.
So, right. Okay. And so that's interesting. Now, tell me specifically with the Shadow of Your Smile, why would it be that set of change? Why would the two chord be the minor seven? Tell me if you agree with this. The reason is because the melody, and that's all the only reason you need, right? Would you say that?
So, yeah, I would say that. I think that's not the only reason in this case, though. That's the 99% reason.
Okay.
The other reason is the nature of the melodic minor scale, which is 5-6-7-1, connecting 5 to 1 in the ascending form.
Gotcha.
That's its character. You know, that's its personality.
Right. Okay, so we're on the two chord right now. So the one chord, right. minor 7, the right. two chord is minor 7 as well, as demonstrated right. in The Shadow of Your Smile. And then the three chord is, what is it?
The chord is major 7, sharp 5.
Okay. And that sharp 5 is coming from the melodic minor, right?
It could come from the melodic or the harmonic.
Or the harmonic.
Right? But I tend to think of it as from the melodic for this same reason. And so the sharp 5 is a really tasty, colorful note.
Right.
So when I'm improvising, if I play that chord, I don't know any examples of that chord as the chord in the lead sheet of a standard. Mm-hmm. I know it in Richie Bayrak and John Abercrombie tunes, but
right.
not
in jazz.
Yeah, but not as the chord in a standard. But I will play it. For example, if I'm playing Autumn Leaves, I might play, and then the three right. chord with the major 7, which sounds great. You know? And so I use it as a substitute.
Gotcha.
For color.
And then 4 is a dominant 7th, correct?
Yeah. 4 is a dominant 7. We know the 4 dominant 7 chord we played in the blues. Even blues in major, we play the 4 as a dominant 7. Blues in minor, we may play it as a dominant 7 or a minor 7. Round Midnight is a song that has a dominant 7-4 chord in it. Dominant 7-4 chord.
Right.
Right? And so it's not 5 of something. It's 4 in E flat minor. It's A flat 7. It doesn't resolve to D flat as a 5 of D flat. It's 4 of E flat minor. Then, shortly after 4 minor 7 happens. Right? And so you see Monk there using the two different qualities of the 4 chord kind of close to each other, juxtaposing the different qualities.
Interesting. Okay. And then the 5 chord, this is where things get weird, right?
Yeah.
Now the 5 chord is minor 7.
Yeah.
Which is from the natural minor.
From the natural minor, yes. And it's a nice modal sound. Other than that, it doesn't resolve as a dominant would resolve. So you'd have A minor. It's a nice kind of modal sound, but it's not strongly functional like 2-5-1. I'd play 2-5 minor, and it wants to continue on and resolve a 5-1 sound. And if you do continue on, it sounds like it would resolve at C major or 3 rather than 1.
Right. Right. Okay, and then the 6th chord is the half diminished chord, which what do you think about that? I mean, I feel like that's common, right? You see that common. Yeah,
you see it a lot. I don't think you see it as much as you do a major 7/6 chord, like, for example, like Autumn Leaves.
But if like a minor blues, you would see that, right?
Yeah. But also you see it in, say, minor 1-6-2-5.
Right.
Right?
And so that chord progression in minor is like the most... I don't know what it is. It just makes me happy every single time I hear it. You know, there's just some chord progressions that are just like, no, that's a great invention.
Yes, that's right. And so I would say that progression is the place where you come across that six. I'll say something about that six chord that tends to kind of confound students that I've taught over the years, and that the root actually changes. So if I'm playing the sixth chord in A minor from the natural minor, it's an F root.
Right.
But if I play the half diminished, it's an F sharp root.
Right.
So the root actually changes.
Right. And this is also something I've gotten from people before, too, that have asked me about this, is the confusion. Again, because there's not one scale that you can draw this from, so it gets really confusing there.
That's right.
The root, because, yeah, it's the root changing. It's not just another note in the chord. It's the actual root changing. So,
and the interesting thing, too, is that the other three notes don't change. They're exactly the same. So you have F major 7... F sharp, yeah. Half diminished.
Oh yeah, you're so right.
You know,
I never thought of that before.
Yeah, it's just the color change in the root. Where and what you will find, which is a little side tangent again, is when you compare the common and the alternate chords, at least one guide tone doesn't change. Usually, right. Either both guide tones don't change.
The thirds and the sevenths.
Yes. So if you take the three chord, major 7 or major 7 sharp 5, the 3 and the 7 don't change.
Right.
If you take the two chord, half diminished 7 or minor 7, the 3 and the 7 don't change. You know, sometimes they do. The four chord, the third of the chord changes. The seventh doesn't. You know,
because the minor seventh is the common one we're drawing it from, and the alternate is the dominant seventh. So it's going to have that major third.
Yes.
The flat three.
Exactly. That's right.
Okay. Interesting. That is enlightening, actually, to think of the sixth chord this way. I mean, that's, and the guide tones. That's really all enlightening.
Yes.
Wow. I think everybody listening is getting their money's worth, which this is free, but I think they're getting their money's worth anyways. all right. So, okay, the seventh chord. Let's just really quickly go over that one, the alternate set that we're listing here.
Okay. That would be the fully diminished the harmonic minor. And so if I'm thinking in A minor, it would be G sharp diminished.
Right.
And so for that G sharp diminished, if I'm building it from A harmonic minor, my notes, what I would play, those are the chord tones.
And it resolves.
So a lot of times with the chord scale theory, a student will learn chord scale theory, they learn a diminished scales, which is great. And so they see G sharp diminished, and they're going to play a G sharp diminished scale. But what they're going to realize is that the A harmonic minor scale actually expresses it more clearly in this context that we're speaking of now than the G sharp diminished scale.
Okay, wait. Hold. Say it again. So a G sharp diminished.
Yeah.
We're going to be playing an A harmonic minor.
Yes.
Oh. Well, it makes so much sense when you think about it. That's, yes. Wow.
And it sounds, that's the sound of resolving to one. Whereas the diminished sound I'm not sure it wants to resolve.
Right.
Necessarily, you know, because it's got F sharp in it. It's got, you know, it's got notes in it that are not really part of the A minor tonality. It's the core of A minor tonality. And so, but I play that a lot. I play the diminished scale even on the five chord for E. If I'm playing E7 to A minor, I would play, and I do play. The diminished scale, or that was inverted diminished off E, the half step whole step.
Half whole.
See, and so, but it's hard. It took me a long time to actually feel like I'm resolving those notes. It took me years, actually. And the person who I listened to and transcribed a lot that helped me learn how to do it was Cannonball, because he does that a lot with diminished scale. Even on that Something Else recording on Autumn Leaves, he plays diminished qualities on the five chord resolving to the minor one. And it's striking at first. It didn't sit nicely in my ear when I first started to hear it. Because the D chord, now he's playing B naturals and G sharps. And the tune is in G minor. And right. And he leans on them for the tension of them and resolves them to the nearest resolutions. And it's really brilliant. But I think for our purposes of talking about minor tonality on that seven chord, we're thinking the harmonic minor of the parent scale of the key.
I love that. Wow, that's amazing. Okay, so great. Again, so we have all this, the show notes today, learnjazzstandards.com/episode114. We'll have these two different sets there for you. And is there any last words on this minor tonality thing that you just want to like, what's your closing statement, Professor Dan?
My closing statement is this. Understanding harmony for a jazz player is foundational. What we really are concerned about is improvising, yes, creating melodies. And so we put some cinder blocks down on the foundation, but we didn't really, except some of the examples that I maybe played on how I would express this melodically, we didn't really talk about how we organize the three scales and the two sets of chords, et cetera, into an improvisational context. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe I'll come back on.
I think we're gonna have to. I mean, you've left us no choice here. Yeah, absolutely. It's well, and I think another thing that you said that just a second ago is, you know, you were saying it took you a long time to, you know, it took you years to understand how to connect that all together. And I don't know. I think that's really encouraging for everybody listening too, because I think a lot of times people get frustrated with music, and I think especially styles like jazz or classical or any of these like very art music kind of things, because there's so much involved in them. But just to remember, I mean, this stuff. I mean, you learn some theory, you listen to some Cannonball, and you do all, you know, and you know, drink your coffee in the morning, and I think, you know, I think it's going to come together, you know. And music is a journey. We're all on the same path, though at different parts of the path, though we may be, and we just keep heading down that direction. And so all of this information is so helpful. Now, to close up the show, I just want you to, I know you have some really cool projects coming up, so would you mind just sharing a little bit about what you're up to? Because I know that everybody is just, I just want everybody to know who you are and what you're doing.
Okay, I'd like to do that. I'm just finishing a project I've been working on for a couple of years. I didn't actually start out thinking about making an album, but that's what it's turning into. And I wrote two pieces. And it's very open, very free. I have Jason Rigby playing saxophone and John Patitucci playing bass on one. On another, Jason and John also join me, but Glenn Velez playing frame drums and Arabic percussion, and Bob Wiener playing drum set. And on the third, I have Steve Thornton playing Latin percussion, Brazilian style percussion. And then with those three, I also recorded a couple of solo guitar pieces, short little things, and really exploring my love of the guitar now that I have more time from not having to teach to do it. And so I'm doing different tunings and open tunings and laying lots of complementary tracks and just having a blast being a guitar player again. And so that's nearing finish. I don't know how I will distribute it, if I'll do it myself, if somebody might want to pick it up. I don't know. I'm not very good at that kind of stuff, but I'm going to try to see what I can figure out. So that's my main project, and I'll continue to record the project after this. I think I want to do just solo guitar stuff, and I've been playing in fingerstyle and open tunings. I'm really in dadgad world right now.
Oh, love dadgad. It's so much fun. Every guitar player listening knows what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
If you're a saxophone player, piano player, you don't get the joy that is dadgad.
That's right.
But you could. But
I'm also exploring A432 instead of 440. There's some talk about it being a frequency of nature, a frequency of the earth, a frequency of healing. And so I'm sitting in it to see if something happens.
Nice. Well, we're going to that sounds like a future episode, a full report of of what happens.
And also, the last thing I would say is all the notes you have from the classes and everything, in my last year's teaching, rather than have students take notes, or I started handing out notes, I compiled everything into books. So every semester of the sequence, students would have a book to work from. And my plan now is to try to take some of that material, which I think is valuable, like the minor tonality stuff, and organize that into publication form. Right now, they're not. And the material really doesn't work so well because it's so compact and condensed. Because it's there to supplement me giving lectures and demonstrations and discussion with students. I need to work it up so that somebody can take the book without me guiding them through in person.
Right, right.
You know, and get the thing. So as a teaching aid, it was great, but I need to try to work it into a form where it's useful for somebody on their own. And so I'll be working on that.
That's amazing. And so we're going to make sure that the audience, when these things happen, when this album comes out, when this book comes out, when all this stuff happens, we're going to make sure the audience knows. And we all appreciate just the massive amount of value you just laid on us. I learned a lot. And a lot of it was a great reminder for me, too. And I just really appreciate that. So just want to thank you again, Dan. And I have this feeling that we might have you on the show again sometime in the future.
Well, I hope so. I want to talk about improvising in minor tonalities. So yeah, let's get together.
All right. Nice to have you, Dan. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Brent.
All right, that's all for today's show. I want to thank you so much for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Another big thanks to our special guest, Dan Carrillo. Man, I love that show. I love that episode. I learned a lot. I hope you learned a lot too. And hey, remember, if you got any value out of today's show, I mean, this podcast, it's 100% free for you. But if you'd like to give back some love to this podcast, it's really simple. All you have to do is go to iTunes, your favorite podcast listening service. Leave a kind rating and review. Helps other people find this show. Helps it climb up in the ranks. And so it just takes a minute or so to do it. So if you wouldn't mind, go over and leave us a rating and review. Greatly appreciate it. All right, we're going to be coming out with another episode of the LJS Podcast, episode 115 next week. I look forward to seeing you back then.
Thanks for listening to the LJS Podcast, brought to you by LearnJazzStandards.com. Subscribe to the series on iTunes. And don't forget to join our jazz community at LearnJazzStandards.com/newsletter.
Hey, podcast listener, would you like to ask me a jazz question and get it answered here on the show? Then go to LearnJazzStandards.com/ask. That's LearnJazzStandards.com/ask.
I look forward to hearing your question and answering it on a future podcast episode. LearnJazzStandards.com/ask or find the link in today's show notes.